Live from the great American Northwest, it's Pro Libertate Radio, a full throttle, no holds barred examination of the threats to life, liberty, and property. Now, here's our host, author, lecturer, and investigative journalist, William Norman Gregg.
I am a bit of a sentimental fool. There are some things that I read, some things that I hear, some movies that I see that will extort tears from me despite my best efforts at stolidity. There are some things that are simply going to get to me. For instance, although I have difficulty with a lot of the trappings and rituals of conventional jingo-flavored nationalism, the third verse of the Star-Spangled Banner, the national anthem, always gets to me because it's talking about the duty of free men to stand between their loved homes and the war's desolation. Ha! That's the anti-war verse of the national anthem. But more importantly, that's the verse that actually places patriotism in context. Your country is your people. I don't define that in ethnic terms. I don't even define that in terms of a shared religious faith. It's the people who are important to you. That's why Robert E. Lee referred to Virginia as my country. I mean, he had what is called telluric patriotism, the patriotism of a specific place, the very soil. He had the scent of the soil of his country in his nostrils as he was being invited to head up an army that would crush his home, ad majorem gloria state. And he declined that offer because he was a patriot attached to specific people. His was not the grand nationalism of Bonaparte, who was the one who was willing to give the mob a whiff of grape shot, fire on the crowds that were thronging the National Assembly. When none of the other colonels could bring himself to do that, Bonaparte had no scruples about it. Well, Robert E. Lee was not the sort of a person who would make himself dictator. He was attached to his country, which was his home, his state, his Virginia, the Virginia in which he had grown up and fallen in love and raised a family. That's what he meant by his country. Well, my country, quite frankly, is the Clan Grigg. It's my wife Corinne and our six wonderful children. I love America. I love the state of Idaho. I have nothing but contempt for the government ruling either the United States of America or this specific state, but I still love the country. But more importantly, I love my country. And it would be a terrible thing, and this, of course, brings me back to the discussion of things that make me cry. There are certain movie scenes that make me cry, and one of them, and you might detect that I'm getting a little verklempt right now, talk amongst yourselves. I'll provide you with another topic. No, I'm not going to go all Mike Myers on here. One of the movie scenes that prompts me to tell the kids, leave the room, you don't want to see your daddy cry, is toward the end of The Sound of Music. Yes, I cry watching The Sound of Music, but only at this particular scene where Captain Von Trapp is trying to make his way through Edelweiss. As he and his family are getting ready to flee a country he loved like the blood in his veins, because it had been betrayed by opportunistic, venal, corrupt, timid, ductile people. You can't really call them men. And absorbed into the Reich. So he had to take his family and leave Austria, because the Austria he loved no longer existed. Now, the question before the House right now is, have we reached a Captain Von Trapp moment here in America's descent into abject tyranny? There are many people who believe that we have. There are some people who, hearing the question, would say, why are you even bothering to ask? It's been that way since, pick your date, 1947, 1945, 1913, 1865, you know, take your pick. There is a publication available online entitled EscapeFromAmerica.com. I became aware of it because there was an article from Escape from America magazine, EFAM, that was linked at LouRockwell.com today by a fellow known by the Nom de Cyber as Uncle Timmy Rudizuli. The essay is America the Monster. America has become a monster, and you are its next meal. There was an old, now, song by Steppenwolf of this name, that is, America the Monster, and as I begin to consider the nature of this country's government, well, it seemed appropriate. That said, America has become a monster, like Goya's mythical portrait. The sleep of reason begets monsters, I believe is what he's referring to. It devours its own children. 1 in 100 are convicts. Education becomes more and more expensive and thus exclusive. Employment becomes scarcer and less well paid. Social safety net programs expand without solving the problems, and it feels free to lay waste whatever sections of the world it desires to. Been in Iraq for almost a decade and show no signs of leaving Afghanistan, not to mention the bill for all of this. Ah, the bill. Well, the government doesn't have to worry about that, does it? After all, that part of the fun and games will be delivered to us, you and me, and our great-grandchildren. And such a bill. No one can even guess what it will come to. No one. And some of us will pay it. Of course, it won't be called the bill. Oh, no. It will be called taxes. Increased taxes, devalued currency, the joys of having an unaccountable monster in charge of our futures. Some will say that it cannot happen, not here. To them I would say, just wait a bit. Remember that income taxes were supposed to be only temporary and never to exceed 2% of income. Yes, and your check is in the mail. But, I hear them say, the law forbids such. I would say to them, the law forbids nothing if it is rewritten as it has been before, and if it is reinterpreted as it has been before, to permit even mandate such as it has been done before. Ah, what of a law that has become only a way for those who desire to redistribute wealth to do so legally? So we have come to a point of decision. Do we allow all that we have to be devoured by this monster? Or do we try to save some bit of it for our own use? You know, retirement and the need, even then, to eat and have a roof over our heads? Are we to be, as so many round the world are, looking for a safe currency that will retain some of its value in years to come, and a safe haven for our bit of fortune as well as ourselves? These would seem to be our choices, from all that the news from Congress and the world financial markets would have us believe. Oh well, perhaps if we just close our eyes and click our heels together 3 times while repeating, no, that's to get back to Kansas, isn't it? Well, we left Kansas a long time ago, I'm afraid. However, we can get to somewhere much better than Kansas if we try. It does take planning and forethought, but that is why there is Escape from America. As you are reading this world-class e-zine, it would seem you are concerned, rightly so, about this monster. But will you do something or just keep clicking your heels and wondering where Toto is? By the way, Toto broke up, unfortunately. They recently had a reunion tour, or at least a one-off. I'm referring, of course, to the 1970s vintage rock band composed of the Paich and Porcaro brothers and fronted by the incomparable Steve Lukather on guitar. Some of our bumpers are from Toto. I might identify a couple of them in future segments. Choice is yours, continues this e-zine essay. I have made mine some time back. It is up to us to decide that it is time to go. Time before we, like somebody before us in other nations, have to go with what we are allowed to carry. The plight of the Jews in Germany and Eastern Europe after World War I and in the 1930s. The Cubans after Castro. The Chinese and Mao. The list could go on. Will it include you along with the Armenians? Shall we be reduced to portable wealth? Read that as diamonds we can carry in our rectums or sew into our children's clothing or dolls. Is that to be our future? Remember, no one wanted to accept those refugees of the 1930s. What makes us think anyone will be more willing to accept us? Do you recall the warnings of the Euro countries during the talked-of exodus of Americans during Iraq II? No one wanted to accept us then, not even Canada. Do you believe there would be any more willing if times became such as to necessitate real expatriation? Consider the differing circumstances of the average Tsarist aristocrat of 1920 and those of Crown Prince Yusupov had been exiled by the Tsar and allowed to keep that part of his fortune he had previously moved to France and Switzerland. Keep in mind that delightful word, previously. What about the others? Well, for the most part, they drove taxis, waited tables, and became ladies of certain virtue. Shanghai was replete with its houses of former aristos, with the future to contemplate as our own. Now, it doesn't have to be quite like the above. Weren't there lots of Cuban attorneys who came to the USA and did quite well as shoe salesmen? Yes, quite so. Here comes the nasty but needful concept, planning, and here it is, previously deposited funds. And then he goes on to give more practical advice for those who are thinking of expatriating themselves. Could it come to this? I earnestly hope not, and I'm here for the duration. Let the record reflect that fact. This is Will Grigg, Pro Libertate Radio on the Liberty News Radio Network, and we'll be back in just a minute. Hey, we found Toto! This track is called Gift with the Golden Gun, and it's from a completely, scandalously underappreciated album by Toto, Turn Back. I believe it came out in 1980, and as Steve Lukather, the guitar player, once said, that album went plywood. Of course, you've heard of albums going gold and platinum and double platinum. That went plywood. They went back to the studio right after this staggering defeat, to use the behind the music cliche, and out of their frustration emerged Toto 4, which won every Grammy award in the universe, and I think went quintuple platinum, if I remember correctly, and it begat the two tracks that everybody remembers, which are Rosanna and Africa. Neither of which really is representative of their larger body of work, but both are very good songs, Rosanna in particular. More particularly, if you listen to the studio track, the so-called LP track with the extended jam at the end, which is just wonderful. I wish they would have let the tape roll for another 5 minutes, the way that they were blazing through that. But that's Toto, anyway, for those of you who are listening to the previous segment and caught my allusion to that band. I don't think that the name is derived from Dorothy's canine companion, the much-reviled canine companion, according to the local Hillary Clinton avatar who wanted to get Dorothy and her little dog, too. I think Toto actually was the name of a commode that the band that would be known by that name saw during a tour of Japan when they were the backup band for Boz Scaggs. But I digress again. I was talking before the break about the grim possibility of expatriation from the United States of America, the United Socialist States of America. Could we find ourselves in a predicament akin to that of Captain Von Trapp at the end of The Sound of Music, as he's literally choked up and incapable of performing the song Edelweiss, as he and his family were prepared to make the mad dash over the Alps to freedom from the homeland in which they had been born, the country that they loved like the breath in their lungs? Just a horrible thing to think, but that country didn't exist anymore once the Anschluss had taken place and they had lost everything that defined them as a country. They ended up having to leave, knowing that their family really was, in a larger and more intimate sense, once larger and more intimate sense, their country. I'm reading from this terrifying but practical essay at Escape from America entitled America the Monster. The author of this piece, who has expatriated himself, is talking about the necessity of making practical preparations if you are indeed planning to leave the United States. Already, and although he doesn't mention it specifically in this essay, there are species of currency controls in place. Try to take, for instance, a large quantity of coin out of the United States and see what that gets you. Right now, there is more than a nickel's worth of nickel in a nickel. More than 5 cents worth of nickel in a nickel. That's one reason why, if you're interested in such things, you ought to be collecting nickels rather than spending them. Now, there's not been much copper in pennies since 1983, but if you can find pre-1983 pennies, that's also a very good way to be building a type of capital that will actually appreciate as the dollar, as every fiat currency eventually does, achieves its innate value, which is zero. And that's probably going to happen more quickly than most people would be willing to bet. But in the Obamacare monstrosity, as we just found out, there are measures intended to bring the precious metals market to heel, the domestic precious metals market. And there are rumblings of a premonitory nature about political persecution of Goldline. I mention them by name because I have been a customer of Goldline back when I was actually in a situation where I had a revenue stream in anticipation of tough times to come. I was buying silver and a little bit of gold from Goldline. Now they're the subject of politically dictated scrutiny because supposedly they're involved in some kind of, well, some kind of what? Some kind of vaguely alleged criminal deception because they're scaring people into buying gold. Well, no, they're not scaring people into buying gold. Anybody who's listened to their presentation on the radio, which is available, I believe, pretty much every day somewhere in this country, or read their material, knows that they give detailed and specific warnings about the risks that are involved in purchasing gold or silver or collectible coins. They're very upfront about the fact that there is a spread that you have to beat in terms of buying coins and looking for them to appreciate. And they always talk about maintaining a diversified portfolio rather than going whole hog into precious metals. And if you're, of course, interested in remaining liquid in the teeth of a recession or depression, you want to be in a cash positive situation. Cash is king in a recession until, of course, the cash itself becomes devalued. But the reason that Goldline is attracting such attention right now is because they are the proverbial child. They and others like them in the precious metals market are the ones who are, by sharp relief, revealing the fraudulent nature of the currency that we're required to take by virtue, I don't think virtue is the right word, de jure as codified in legal tender laws. In other words, they're the ones who, by remaining constant, are showing the fundamental illegitimacy of the scrip issued by the government ruling us. And so we've reached a point now where it's becoming a very dicey proposition to own or to acquire precious metals, or even relatively precious metals, such as nickel, and to take it out of the country. And the time is not far distant, I believe, when currency controls, export controls on currency, are going to become a tangible reality. And this, of course, underscores something that I have spoken about and warned about for years. That is the natural, unavoidable coefficient of immigration control. People talk about the need to secure our borders. Well, the problem is, from whom are we going to secure those borders? Immigration into the country is down dramatically as a result of the economic contraction. That's the sort of thing that happens every time you find a depression or a recession take its toll on an economy. Fewer people are coming into the country in pursuit of work because work is not to be found. So you're going to be fortifying the border, but those fortifications can prevent ingress or egress. Now, follow my logic. If you're building a quasi-Marxist police state, which is the direction we're headed right now, and have been headed for some time, if you oppose the creation of a police state and you're worried about the prospect of that government taking everything that you have from you, why do you want to give that government power over your freedom to leave? And that's what's happening right now as the borders are being fortified and the Homeland Security monstrosity is strengthening itself and testing its sinews with respect to control over not merely entry into the country, but exit therefrom. There's no such thing as a wall with one side, at least in our three-dimensional universe. I suppose if we were living in the hypothetical construct called Flatland, there could be a wall with one side. But in the universe that is so much with us, to paraphrase Wordsworth, a wall can either keep people out or hold people in. So we're building a prison society. We're seeing, rather, a prison society built around us. And many people who are among the most ardent critics of Barack Obama's regime think that it should exercise more power in ways that could keep us from leaving if that's what we have to do. I don't see where that is logical or wise. This is Will Grigg, Pro Libertate Radio, 866-986-6397 is our call-in number on the Liberty News Radio Network. We'll be right back. There's another website that I visited recently called deathoftheamericandream.com. Yeah, this is my discretionary reading. It's the sort of thing I read to relax when I'm not trying to plow through Proust or something like that. I'll read things like Death of the American Dream or getoutofamerica.com, that kind of thing. This is a really fascinating and perfectly terrifying essay, 50 statistics about the U.S. economy that are almost too crazy to believe. I'll get through as many of these as I can. Most Americans know that the U.S. economy is in bad shape, but what most Americans don't know is how truly desperate the financial situation of the United States really is. The truth is that what we are experiencing is not simply a downturn or a recession. What we are witnessing is the beginning of the end for the greatest economic machine that the world has ever seen. Our greed and our debt are literally eating our economy alive. Total government, corporate, and personal debt has now reached 360% of gross domestic product, which is far higher than it ever reached during the Great Depression era. Think about that for a second. There were no credit cards. There were no teaser rate mortgages. There were no resettable mortgages. There were no ARMs. People, for the most part, owned, not for the most part, but when you were dealing with home ownership, these were people who owned their homes and were not mortgaging them multiple times as a way of financing household debt, emulating the conduct of the government that rules us, essentially. We have nearly totally dismantled our once colossal manufacturing base. We have shipped millions upon millions of middle-class jobs overseas. We have lived far beyond our means for decades, and we have created the biggest debt bubble in the history of the world. A great day of financial reckoning is fast approaching, and the vast majority of Americans are totally oblivious. But the truth is that you cannot defy the financial laws of the universe forever. What goes up must come down. The borrower is the servant of the lender. Hey, that's biblical. That means, of course, it's ironclad truth. Cutting corners always catches up with you in the end. Sometimes cold, hard numbers for many of us fully to realize the situation that we are facing. So, the following are 50 very revealing statistics about the U.S. economy that are almost too crazy to believe. Excuse me. Number 50, in 2010, the U.S. government is projected to issue almost as much new debt as the rest of the governments of the world combined. Which is the largest socialist government in the known universe? It isn't in China. It isn't in Cuba. It isn't in Venezuela or North Korea. It's in Washington, D.C. Number 49, it is being projected that the U.S. government will have a budget deficit of approximately $1.6 trillion in 2010. Just a couple of days ago, the Obama regime was trying to take credit for what it urged us to accept as the fact that the deficit would be only $1.4 trillion. That's the annual deficit. 48. If you went out and spent $1 every single second, it would take you more than 31,000 years to spend $1 trillion. Number 47. In fact, if you spent $1 million every single day since the birth of Christ, you still would not have spent $1 trillion by now. Number 46. Total U.S. government debt is now up to 90% of the gross domestic product. Oh, my word. Number 45, total credit market debt in the United States, including government, corporate, and personal debt, has reached 360% of GDP. Number 44, U.S. corporate income tax receipts were down 55% to $138 billion for the year ending September 30th, 2009. Number 43, there are now 8 counties in the state of California that have unemployment rates of over 20%. By the way, that underestimates the gravity of our unemployment circumstances. If you go to shadowstats.com, run by John Williams, who is a credentialed PhD economist. Oh, incidentally, Department of Corrections, very quickly. One of our callers earlier referred to me as Dr. Grigg. I am not a doctor. I don't play one on TV or on the radio, just by way of full disclosure here. But go to shadowstats.com, and you can read the unexpurgated and honestly calculated rates of inflation, the monetary supply, and unemployment. Unemployment is at least 22% nationwide. Number 42, in the area around Sacramento, California, there is one closed business for every 6 that are still open. Forgive me, 41. In February, there were 5.5 unemployed Americans for every job opening. Number 40, according to a Pew Research Center study, approximately 37% of all Americans between the ages of 18 and 29 have either been unemployed or underemployed at some point during the recession. Number 39. More than 40% of those employed in the United States are now working in low-wage service jobs. That's more than 40%. Number 38, according to one new survey, 24% of American workers say that they have postponed their planned retirement age in the past year. Parenthetically, I don't plan to retire. I believe that retirement is just you announcing to God and the universe that you're ready to die. I intend to stay busy and working for every day that God sends me. Whether or not I get paid for that work is, of course, a different question. I've been doing a lot of work for no pay for the last 4 years. Number 37, over 1.4 million Americans have filed for personal bankruptcy in 2009, which represented a 32% increase over 2008. Not only that, more Americans filed for bankruptcy in March 2010 than during any month since U.S. bankruptcy law was tightened in October 2005. Number 36, mortgage purchase applications in the United States were down nearly 40% from a month ago to their lowest level since April of 1997. Number 35, RealtyTrack has announced that foreclosure filings in the U.S. established an all-time record for the second consecutive year in 2009. That record will fall this year, I interject. Number 34, according to RealtyTrack, foreclosure filings were reported on 367,056 properties in March 2010, an increase of nearly 19% from February, an increase of nearly 8% from March 2009, and the highest monthly total since RealtyTrack began issuing its report in January 2005. Number 33, in Pinellas and Pasco counties, which include St. Petersburg, Florida, and the suburbs to the north, there are 34,000 open foreclosure cases. 10 years ago, there were only about 4,000. Number 32, in California's Central Valley, which incidentally is being starved and desiccated into submission by way of conscious policy, one out of every 16 homes is in some phase of foreclosure. They're breeding a dust bowl in California's Central Valley. This is as deliberate as the effort by Stalin to starve out the kulaks. It's not on the same order of magnitude, obviously. It's just deranged, demonic evil. It's not stupidity. These people aren't stupid. They must know what they're doing. Number 31, the Mortgage Bankers Association recently announced that more than 10% of all U.S. homeowners with a mortgage had missed at least one payment during the January to March time period. That was a record high and up from 9.1% a year ago. Number 30, U.S. banks repossessed nearly 258,000 homes nationwide in the first quarter of 2010, a 35% jump from the first quarter of 2009. Number 29, for the first time in U.S. history, banks own a greater share of residential housing net worth in the United States than all individual Americans put together. That, by the way, is something I predicted in 2005 in an article I published just after the bankruptcy laws were changed. Number 28, more than 24% of all homes with mortgages in the United States were underwater as of the end of 2009. That, by the way, is much higher now. Number 27, U.S. commercial property values are down approximately 40% since 2007, and currently 18% of all office space in the United States is sitting vacant. That number, by the way, is going to double within the next year and a half, I predict. Number 26, defaults on apartment building mortgages held by U.S. banks climbed to a record 4.6% in the first quarter of 2010. That was almost twice the level of a year earlier. Number 25, in 2009, U.S. banks posted their sharpest decline in private lending since 1942. I don't know if it's going to be mentioned later on in this list, which I haven't read all the way through yet, but we just saw within the last couple of days the 100th bank failure this year. There were 140 bank failures in all of 2009. I think most of them tend to cluster between October and December. And so we're probably going to see a new record this year for bank failures, as well as everything else that's being described in this dismal and terrifying litany. Number 24, New York State has delayed paying bills totaling $2.5 billion as a short-term way of staying solvent, but officials are warning that its cash crunch could soon get even worse. Number 23, to make up for a projected 2010 budget shortfall of $280 million, Detroit issued $250 million of 20-year municipal notes in March. The bond issuance followed on the heels of a warning from Detroit officials that if its financial state didn't improve, it could be forced to declare bankruptcy. Well, we're going to see Detroit go bankrupt. We're probably going to see New York go bankrupt, both the state and eventually the city. It just gets worse from here. I'll be back with more grim tidings after this. This is Will Grigg, Pro Libertate Radio, and we'll be right back. System memory crash.
Now, back to our host, author, lecturer, and investigative journalist, William Norman Grigg.
Hey, I'm sorry if you just heard a sharp exclamation of pain during the bumper leading into the segment. My shoulder is talking to me, and the sort of things it's saying I can't repeat in polite company. I spent some time at the gym today. Very quick, personal, self-indulgent digression here. Some of you might be aware of the fact that about a year ago, I almost died from a gastrointestinal infection. And as a result, I've not been able to stay with the workout program consistently, and I've not been able to go back to the gym. I used to live in the gym. I used to live for the gym. And before my gastrointestinal infection started to change my life in ways that were undesirable, a few months before that, several weeks before that anyhow, I hurt myself in the gym, got a little bit too exuberant when I was doing the bench press. It was the day that the Star Trek film debuted. Actually, it was the day before the official debut. I actually got in with passes to a special sneak preview along with my three older sons, and I was really excited about the prospect of seeing this new movie. And, you know, when you're throwing around 430 pounds on the bench press, you need to be a little bit more judicious than I was, and I ended up tweaking my shoulder. And that is why I was just grimacing in pain, is because stupid, incorrigible fool that I am, I overdid it again. And so if you hear an occasional grunt or groan or squeal, that's because my middle-aged joints are reminding me that I'm not 19 years old anymore. Tempus fugit, time, the subtle thief of youth, as Milton put it. So, we are talking about this dismal litany of economic indicators that give us a pretty detailed description, in depth, of just how consummately screwed we are as a country here. I'm now down to 22 on this list of 50 statistics about the U.S. economy that are almost too crazy to believe. This is from endoftheamericandream.com, which is a good place to go if you suffer from Pollyanna or Paul McCartney syndrome and you're irrepressibly cheerful and incurably upbeat. Go to that website and it will fix you in a hurry. Number 22, the National League of Cities says that municipal governments will probably come up between $56 billion and $83 billion short between now and 2012. That's a lowball estimate, in my opinion. Number 21, half a dozen cash-poor U.S. states have announced that they are delaying their tax refund checks. Oh, boy, we don't get to delay our payments, but they can delay our refunds. Number 20, two university professors recently calculated that the combined unfunded pension liability for all U.S. states is $3.2 trillion. Number 19, according to economicpolicyjournal.com, 32 U.S. states have already run out of funds to make unemployment benefit payments, and so the federal government has been supplying these states with funds so that they can make their payments to the unemployed. By the way, that's the same kind of thing that happened in the last Depression, which someday will be known as the Lesser Depression. Number 18, this most recent recession has erased 8 million private sector jobs in the United States. More importantly, this recession is creating millions of coercive sector jobs. It's another part of the story, and perhaps in the next segment I'll fill in some of the details there. Number 17, paychecks from private business shrank to their smallest share of personal income in U.S. history during the first quarter of 2010. By the way, the Obama administration says that things are getting better. And from the perspective of people who were suckled on socialism in their subsidized cribs, the economy is getting better because the government is controlling more of it. And everybody knows that it is the government that is the font of all blessings. That is, everybody of that cultic persuasion. Number 16, U.S. government provided benefits, including Social Security, unemployment insurance, food stamps, and other programs, rose to a record high during the first 3 months of 2010. Number 15, 39.68 million Americans are now on food stamps, which represents a new all-time record. But things look like they are going to get even worse. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is forecasting that enrollment in the food stamp program will exceed 43 million Americans in 2011. It's not going to take that long, I suspect. Number 14, Phoenix, Arizona features an astounding annual car theft rate of 57,000 vehicles and has become the new car theft capital of the world. This, by the way, is not something that reflects problems with illegal immigration and crime growing out of illegal immigration. Although, granted, there is a problem in the border states with people absconding with automobiles that turn up in Mexico. That's just a feature of geography. And it has been ever thus. That's been going on for decades. I suspect this has something more to do with the fact that Phoenix, like Las Vegas, like a number of other formerly boomtown communities in that part of the Southwest, is now becoming an economic sinkhole. It's desperation that's driving this as much as anything, desperation and opportunity. Number 13, the U.S. law enforcement authorities claim that there are now over 1 million members of criminal gangs inside the country. That, of course, doesn't count people who are employed by the government. These 1 million gang members are responsible for up to 80% of the crimes committed in the United States each year. I'm going to slip down a couple because we do have a caller. I'll just go to the top one. Number one, according to the Tax Foundation's micro-simulation model, to erase the 2010 U.S. budget deficit, the U.S. Congress would have to multiply each tax rate by 2.4. Thus, the 10% rate would be 24%, the 15% rate would be 36%, and the 35% rate would have to be 85%. In other words, we're talking about confiscatory levels of taxation, and that puts us on a treadmill that will always and forever be accelerating because we're racing against inflatable currency and ever-expandable debt. Eventually, of course, the system is simply going to go into cardiac arrest. James from Hodges, South Carolina, has joined us. Thanks for being patient, James. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. I have a question for you. And everybody talks about the Federal Reserve getting the interest off of the money that they lend us. I have heard, though, that they give some of the money back to the Treasury. Do you know how much the banks themselves get, how much goes back?
That's something I can't answer because even if the information is available, it's presented in such recondite and opaque fashion that I could make head or tail of it. They do their level best with what little they disclose to make what they disclose utterly impenetrable to those of us who have not received some combination of training in Sanskrit and Talmudic education, quite frankly. I don't understand head or tail of what they put out by way of public disclosure, but I can't answer that question because, to the best of my knowledge, it's never been put in plain English in a document to which we have access.
What do you believe happened to it? I mean, do you believe they give some back, or you don't?
No, I don't think they do. I don't think they do. I think that it's probably hidden away, burrowed deeply in accounts that are controlled by the member banks of the Federal Reserve System, and then somehow apportioned according to whatever secret protocols exist to the benefit of the people who run the system. I don't think that the Treasury gets any of the slop off, and I don't see why the Federal Reserve would give it to them, because they're completely unaccountable.
Well, if we paid back the principal, then, I mean, is there any attempt ever? Has there ever been an attempt to pay back the principal, or does the Federal Reserve just do this because they know they're only they make enough just getting the interest?
I think the latter is actually closer to the truth. You might be familiar with what Dan Smoot proposed by way of a solution to the debt problem. He said that the government can coin money in any denomination. Why doesn't it simply coin an increment of money equivalent to what the Federal Reserve would identify as a national debt, give it to the Federal Reserve and say, there, go be content with this, you're out of business, bye-bye. There are a couple of people who have made proposals to that effect. I think Bo Greitz at one point suggested that be done as well. I don't know if there's any merit to that suggestion, but that's as close as anybody has come to a proposal actually to pay off the principal here that the Federal Reserve would identify as our debt. But once
again, the last thing I heard was that I think last year was $700 billion, something like that, was the interest. I don't know if that's accurate,
yeah.
But say it's $700 billion. Well,
I think
if some banks are getting actually $700 billion, they're getting an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, it boggles the mind that there are entities getting that much money. And, I mean, what do they do with it? I mean, are they
sitting on it.
Of it? Or is it put, you know, they buy gold with it and hold it? Or what?
Well, there's some of that going on right now, yeah. I mean, that's something that a lot of people are looking into right now, is that there was recently this very mysterious large purchase of gold by personages and entities unknown, and I think that a lot of that is going on right now because the banks are sitting on what the Federal Reserve is creating. It's not releasing for public finance all this so-called money that the Federal Reserve has been generating since 2008. And that's because the Federal Reserve is not penalizing them for sitting on it. Right now, they're allowing the banks to accumulate capital. And I think what's going to happen is that the floodgates are going to be breached sometime, maybe starting this fall, maybe next year. And then we're going to get swept away in this huge roaring tide. And that's not something I'm looking forward to. James, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
God bless you. I love the state you live in. I think I mentioned that before. South Carolina is a beautiful place full of wonderful people. Thanks for listening to Hour 2 of Pro Libertate on the radio. We'll be back with Hour 3 in just a few minutes. Our call number is 866-986-6397 here on the Liberty News Radio Network. I am your servant, William Grigg, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so I'd love to hear from you.